I can begin. It is Monday morning. We have beautiful weather here, but it's not good for us. A Jew can't rejoice no matter what. If you saw, the chief rabbi already said we got to stop praying for rain. So, and this morning when I got into Sam Dershowitz drives the shul, so I get into his car at 5:15. I say, who can believe this weather? And Sam says to me, yeah, but we need rain right away. You can't rejoice too much. You get hit hard. But the weather is gorgeous. Let's enjoy it. Better than Florida. Not a cloud in the sky. Today is January 4th, 2017.
December.
How'd I get to January? Say the it's Beit Vayeshev. Beit Vayeshev, I'm pretty safe, but outside of that, believe me, I don't know the date. It's the 4th of December, we're soon going to hit Pearl Harbor Day, and that's the important day. I apologize to everybody, first of all, Boker Tov to those in front of me and to those listening around the world. I apologize, I had no way of doing this series without beginning yesterday, and it's consecutive, it's ongoing. They uploaded the shiur yesterday right after class so people could hear it, and we continue today. I've reached the stage in life where I want to say thank you. One has to make a cheshbon and nefesh. B'molda la'kadosh baruch hu. I can tell you halachically, the achronim already deal with it. When you hit 70, whether you have to make a shechiyanu. Some of you may be aware of this. And I paskin lalacha today, it's not 70, it's when you hit 80. That's when the question of Shechiyanu comes up today. And I will make a Shechiyanu down the line with my family, with my children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, because they're surprising me, but you know, you hear the whispers, and I know the gift they're going to give me, and it works out very well with the Shechiyanu, so we'll make it at that time. But I want to publicly thank Yeshiva University. I was very moved yesterday. I didn't realize what would happen. Mark, you can bear witness, but after shiur, I was told there'll be haramat hakosat. Haramat hakosat was the one thing there wasn't. There'll be haramat hakosat. That's Vic brought in haramat hakosat yesterday, and we repeat it today at Vic's request. But there was a regulated meal, mamish, and a lot of beautiful blessings, and with the miracle of modern life, I was also blessed by the president of the yeshiva, who happens to be my student, Ari Berman, Rabbi Doctor. I was blessed by a chaver whom I grew up with, and yet remember his mother crying to me, what will be with Heshi, what will be with Heshi, he'll never make a living. And that, of course, is a gong be Israel, Rav Tzvi Shechta. And I was blessed by the new dean of the yeshiva, Rabbi, I know him as Mark Penn, I yet knew his father from Solanta, but he goes today with the name Menachem Penn. So I want to thank everyone for their kind blessings, and I hope the Ribbono Shel Olam is listening. Stephanie said beautiful Divrei Torah, Rabbi Miller said beautiful Divrei Torah, and Vakona Hakol, as Stephanie spoke, and he'll take care of those that he's kinder. Now, I want to say thank you to five individuals, and I began yesterday, the first person, of course, Reb Hanoch Fishman. I described Reb Hanoch Fishman. I just want to add to the first volume that I quoted, a second volume of Chidushei Rabbi Hanoch came out on essentially Baba Kama, and in addition on other Yeshivat Masechtot. And I described this man coming from Brunovich to Mir, to Kobe, Japan, to Shanghai, China, and here he is, a refugee in the United States, giving his shiur in Mir as they try to start it up in Brooklyn, but then he's married, he starts to have children, and he needs a more elegant parnasa, and he winds up teaching in Yeshiva Slump in the Bronx. I had Rab Hanoch his third year as a Rebbe in Solanta, a year or two before YU takes him on as a Rebbe. Did you have him as a Rebbe when you went, but you knew the name? You knew the name Reb Hanoch. You had him as a Rebbe. Rabbi Reuben had him. So I described Reb Hanoch. This is Reb Hanoch 1950, with all that we described yesterday. Now I want to describe who he was facing and what he was up against. And remember, you know, we grow up, we take things for granted. when I came in Aliyah, so I mentioned this upstairs at the Sudan. When I came in Aliyah, I came with a contract to work for the Encyclopedia Judaica. What happened with the Judaica was very simple. It was government money funded by the Germans because there was an Encyclopedia Judaica coming out in Germany. 7-8 volumes came out in German, and Hitler stopped it. So now reparations money paid for the Israeli government to redo it and complete it, and they decided to do it in English because obviously more Jews speak English than German. Now, Kol Zman was a government project, if I can use my native Yiddish, which was criticized by Reb Heschel yesterday. But what was the word he used? A geholzene Yiddish, I think was the word he used.
What does that mean?
That you're chopping it up like wood, you know, it's not fluent. A geholzene Yiddish, I think. I can take the criticism that my Yiddish is not as good as my Hebrew or English, believe me. It's okay. I can take even more difficult criticisms. So, when I came in Aliyah, I came to write for the encyclopedia, and I did my share, and when it was a government project, the chum behind the chum morgen, you know that expression, I come today, I come tomorrow, the money's there, man darf nicht heilen, you don't have to rush. Then a consortium from Australia bought out the rights to the encyclopedia, headed by Mr. Yitzhak Rishon. He interviewed me in America. And when it's private money, any of you in business will know, Kum Hein Kum Morgen does not apply anymore. So it became a very serious project, and within 2 years we completed it. And I did play I wouldn't say a major role, but I played an important role. At a certain point already, I had the authority. Anything I signed off on didn't go further. It was published as I signed off on it. So, I never dreamt I would go back to teaching full time. I spoke yesterday about BMT 69. I can't repeat myself now, it's not important, but if you read Washington, you'll get all the details. In 71, the encyclopedia ended. And I've now faced the crossroad, and the publisher now became Keta Publishing House, which still is in business. And they offered me a top salary, and by Israeli standards, I think it was 2,000 lira a month. That was a real salary to become a staff editor. But what could I do? I had to teach, and my heart went out to go back to teaching full-time. Probably, I think, half the salary, if not half, 1,200 lira a month, working in many places. Because no one wanted to give me a full-time job. They wanted to see if I know how to teach. So the principal of a religious high school in Bayit Vagan calls me, and he wants to offer me a few hours teaching the highest class in the high school. And I listened to the offer. It would have put me over the top as far as a full-time job teaching, with most of it on a collegiate level and a few hours a week on a high school level. And I asked around to get advice, and they told me, Aaron, don't you dare take that job. You are about as prepared to teach Israeli high school kids Gemara who are going into the army 1 year later as a Chinaman dancing a kazatska in Red Square. And they were right. Until today, you understand, I can't walk into an Israeli high school class. I was in the army, my first lecture in the army when I finished basic training, and I lectured, all I hear were the murmurs of the American accent. All right, I learned quickly. From the second lecture on, I was a star. I never struck out again for the next 15 years. Why? Because I began this lecture. Oh boy. 200 chayalim jump forth. We gotta hear this man. He's an American. Oh, he came on Aliyah, gave up the gold and silver of America. He has something to tell us. And I learned the trick. One time I came on, if you're good kids, I'll let you hear it at some point down the line. Chayalim yikarim, ani rotze lahanik lechem patent, eich lumol Torah ulekalel et hamafakeid, bevat achat. All I can tell you is 200 guys were falling off their seats to catch that one, and I gave it to them. You know my part, the Rambam, Perik Yud Bet, Hilchot Malachim Yud Bet Bet. Amru Chachamim Tipach Rucham Shamcha Keketz. May those who try to find out, those to figure out when Mashiach is coming, may they drop dead. The words of the Rambam, the Mefaked, says, Rakefet, ma talma malel, what are you mumbling? Lomei Torah, Mefaked. Yafeh, tamshich, continue to curse me. You follow? Rebbeinu shel olam, what a gift for the chayalim. So I was warned, Avi, don't you dare teach these high school kids. On Zeicher today, I have a grandson who just finished three different masters, you know, the Hezder army, everything behind him, fought in wars, etc., and three different masters, and I plead with him, get your doctorate, and no, he loves teaching, he's in Shalavim, in the high school, and he loves teaching, you understand, but he grew up in Israel, all right, he's fluent in English, but Hebrew is his native language, so he can handle it. He grew up here. He's part of the crowd. I'm an outsider. Tell me, why am I telling you all this? Could you imagine what Rabbi Fishman had to face? They bring him into Solanta to teach eighth grade. Now, let me tell you something. My generation, and I'll talk about myself, and I can give you 100 other names of Rabbanim, Rosh Yeshiva, Gedolei Yisrael, who all have the same background. There were over 1 million Jews in the Bronx. If 1% was Shoyim Shabbos, I'm overstating the case. What do I mean? It was an era where 98% of the Jews worked half a day Shabbos. If you owned the butcher shop, Steve, because you were a kosher butcher, even if you were a machal Shabbos from today to tomorrow, but the shop was closed. That was the... That was the exception, because part of owning the butcher shop, but not all, many of the butcher, who was from? Who knew Halacha? It was a different world. Our homes were filled with Judaism, Yiddishkeit, but not with halacha. You understand what I'm saying? So I grew up in a world, my home, kosher. Shabbos, my Zayda lived with us from the time his wife died in 1939. Made Kiddush. My mother didn't cook on Shabbat. My grandparents, who really I didn't know. My grandmother and grandfather, Mitzad, my father, were never Mechallel Shabbos all the years they lived in America. I never knew that grandmother. I'm told she was a tzaddiket. And one time my father told me that he asked his mother, how do you feel about your kids not being from like you are? And she said, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam takes care of every guy. He can certainly take care of Yiddish kinder like my children, even if they're not that from. They didn't know. It's a sad comment, but this was the reality. Now, am I a Baal Tshuva? Absolutely not. See, this is where you have to bear with me and go a little deeper. A Baal Tshuva is someone who has a world and has to destroy that world. I see here there was a sign on the board. They're dealing with questions that we get involved with in Balai Tshuva, homes are not kosher, Shabbos, what do you do when you come home, what do you do when you come home for Pesach, etc., etc. I get the Shaila all the time. I just got it the other day from a Talmud who studied here 20 years ago. His aunt, and a real fabulous fellow, a very strong, his aunts and uncles came and his aunt embraces him, what to do. I told him, there's an Alta Shaila, looking to the Rambam, If it's belit tava, there's no problem. Don't embarrass your aunt. let her hug you and wish you well. Finished. It's the whole shaila of offering, shaking hands. How much has been written on it? But medapat maseichel. If the yekesh rabbanim umati, if a woman offers you your hand, you don't embarrass her. The rav took a woman's hand. I can tell you that halacha lemaisa, she offered her hand. You don't embarrass her. But Mirafab Mseichel, when a Machon Gold girl, coming back to yesterday's event, asked me, a BMT boy said, I go out with this Machon Gold girl, and I give her Divrei Torah, and she wants to give me a Yashikayach. I say to him, God forbid you should take her hand. You understand? You have to have a little Seichel here. So Baal Tshuva is someone who had a world and has to break it down and reconstruct it. Reconstructing the world is not always simple. And one day, we'll go back, I spoke about this 20, 30 years ago in great depth when I lectured on the Musa movement. One of the reasons people were opposed to Musa, and this is an interesting question, why should anyone be opposed to Musa? Dov, you go to yeshiva, your father tells you need abyssal Musa. What's wrong with Musa? But one of the problems with Musa was it played with your inner thinking. And in other words, when someone walks into a room and they stand up for him, so the guy can become a Baal Gaiva. Then he starts analyzing, maybe I'm not a Baal Gaiva, they're standing up for me because of the sefer I'm holding, the tefillin I'm carrying. You start getting involved in 101 different questions. Maybe I'm not humble, maybe I'm just doing it, people should look at me. You're standing a langish mon esrei. I mean, I've heard stories, but it's boggles my mind that people stand Shmon Esrei saying nothing just so they should finish later than others. I mean, and people swear to me this is true. It's beyond my comprehension, but okay, you don't open a Pandora's box. So this is about Shiva. We kids, myself and many others that are very famous Rabbanim, very big Lamdanim today, I've been a total Shomer Shabbos from the age of 11, I would say. You follow? Had I wound up in Solanta, I told you the story. My mother always, the first year I go to public school, she sent me to Cheder, that I went into a rabbi's home and he taught me how to read. And only a few years ago, within the last 10 years, did I find out what family my mother comes from and who my forebears are, my yichus. I have very big yichus. There's no one else that I know teaching Torah who's a blood relation to the first man to build Torah in the United States, Harav Doctor, my cousin Bernard Revel, Dov Revel. Okay? So my mother, that's her family, and she used to tell me about the Kalvariski family. And I was a dummy because I figured, what does my mother know about Kovner and Kalvariski? My mother was born in Harlem. My father was born in Harlem. What do they know about the Alte Heim, the old country? I never listened. Then, as you know, I found that if you read the introduction to the fourth edition of Rebel, I tell the story how I see this book in Geula, just came out, Yashar Yisroni, a memoir on Kovner. And I opened it up, and there's Bernard Revel, and there's Kalvariski, and I called the author, and he knew my whole family, and every story my mother told me was true. And now I start to understand my grandmother, who my mother occasionally said that she suffered, that five out of her six children had no connection to Yiddishkeit whatsoever. My mother died a few years ago at a very ripe age. If I go by my mother's age, I'm a kid yet. And when she died, she had well over 50 great-grandchildren living in Israel. They're more living in America. And her great-grandchildren take her five siblings, put them together, and multiply by 10, and you won't even get what's left of the rest of the family. Okay? So you start to understand, but this was America, the men worked. And all my friends, so one of them teaches here actually, his mother was what? Was from? Not his father. Father worked on Shabbos. There's another rabbi I can tell you active in Jerusalem. His father drove a cab on Shabbos. The mother was from. So this was the element. Now, is there an advantage or disadvantage? And you see, growing up like this, never having to destroy a world, so I consider myself FFB. But I'm not entirely FFB, and I'll show you two sides of the coin. One side, what's the value of the name Tarrican? Tarrican family? Rabbi Nathan Tarrican, I grew up one of the foremost, that was your uncle, right? One of the foremost Rabbanim in the Bronx. All right, you grew up with the name Tarrican. Morty, you had guidance from your father from the age of one day on. Your father and mother guided you. Right or wrong? You can play games, all right? To put it simply, you had no choice. And this is why Chazal say, B'machem Shebal Tshuva made Ein Tzadik Gomel Yechol Lamod, because of Baal Tshuva, he grew up, he chose on his own. And by the way, people who I've gotten this question, you know, from collegiate kids I taught, it's a very fine question. Rebbe, do I deserve a reward for being firm? I had these type of parents and these type of grandparents. And Shabbos, I was 3 years of age. I already loved Shabbos. I remember my daughter, my eldest daughter, she used to call the shul the cake house, where I was rabbi, Maplewood. So how did she associate, what did she associate with the shul? That every Shabbos you come to shul, you get cake. My son-in-law, Danny, runs the president of the shul in Rehov Palmach. He's the candy man. I see all these little kids lining up, and every Friday he goes to the shuk and he brings back a big bag of candy. And all right, you beautiful. A Baal Tshuva has to choose. So he has an advantage over an FFB. The FFB has an advantage because some of these Baalei Tshuva, see, I taught the Michalah, Rabbi Koopman was a great teacher, great individual. But I always sensed with him, he couldn't handle the oddballs. In other words, I remember in the early 70s, we had a girl or two who became frum through the Kalbach crowd. And it wasn't normative. It was a little bit off the beaten path. You look at Breslov today. I had a good chavre in yeshiva. He became a Breslover. Reb David Miller keeps on asking me. He just found out. This years ago I knew, but it just resurfaced. Rabbi David, we're a Bronx mafia here, so we all know each other going back to the year one. So they just found out about this individual became a Breslover. And all right, there's no question that you look at he's a mechutin with Rabbi Berlin. Do you understand? There's no question, this is off the beaten path. So you see, sometimes these Baalei Tshuva, they're not walking with their 10 toes on the ground. They've gone through a whole process. They've rebuilt the world, but it's not entirely stable. That's a disadvantage at times. And, you know, in the Haredi world, they don't allow a real Haredi, you can't marry a Baal Tshuva. This is, I'm not praising the Haredi world for this, I'm criticizing them. But this is the reality. Sfadim don't marry Ashkenazim, and certainly Baalei Tshuva, they're worried. In South Africa, I'll never forget, where Ichveis 90%, 80% of the Shomer Shabbos Jews, and South Africa has the highest percent of Shmirat Shabbos in the world. It may even be higher than the state of Israel right now. In state of Israel, where we're hitting, we're well over 30%. South Africa goes on to well over 40%, if not 50% today. So when the Chevra Kadisha, the head of the Chevra Kadisha, told me, I'm FFB, but we have a rule in the Chevra Kadisha, you cannot join until you've been in Shomer Shabbos for 10 years. You understand? It's very interesting. So on that level, an FFB has it better than a BT because you had parental guidance. In other words, you had a father, you had a mother, you had a living tradition, you went to shul, you were surrounded by friends, by family. There was a concept of Devar Hashem Zu Halacha. Now, let's go back to the story I told you. Rakefet is now Rakefet, he's coming Aliyah, and 1971, he's here 2 good years already, and he gets this offer. Himmelfarb, I think that's the name of the high school, the religious high school in Bayit Vagan. It's headed up today by an American, and it's a fabulous school. I have one grandson who went there, and the results are absolutely stunning. It's not a yeshiva high school, it's a regular high school, but a religious high school. and the results are absolutely stunning. Jeremy Savitsky is the principal. He is mashahu. But he grew up here, right? An American, but an American who grew up here. His formative years were all here. So now just imagine, you take Reb Henoch Fishman, you take a prince, you take a Talmud of the Brisker Rav, Reb Velpel, a Talmud of Reb Yeruchim Lubavitch, everything we spoke about yesterday, and you put him into a classroom with a whole group of kids like Ani Roshkoff. I don't know if there were maybe one or two of the kids came from Shomer Shabbos homes. Maybe one or two. There was a Berger family in the Bronx. They were Shomer Shabbos. The Potok family, we spoke about it, the famous Chaim Potok. By the way, I had to correct myself yesterday. I made some mistake last week. I spoke about Rabbi Sobolevsky as being he's a grandson of the Potoks. I skipped 30 years. It dawned upon me Shabbos. I corrected myself yesterday, but I got a letter, an email today. What type of idiot are you with Rabbi Sobolevsky? I made him a son-in-law. He's a grandson. His mother is the daughter of the Potok. She's the youngest sister of Simon and Chaim Potok. Wonderful family. And he's at Adam Gottlob, who's a Talmud Chacham, first rate, married to a Samit. His wife is a medical doctor, if I'm not mistaken. Also beautiful family. But these kids, and I look back now, such hashgacha pratit that there was no other way for them to go. They needed panasa. Some wound up in Solanta, some wound up in Maimonides, Rabbi Rubin will testify to that, some wound up in Chicago, some even wound up in Los Angeles, you should know, some wound up in Baltimore, absolutely. And it was Hashkacha min Shamayim. And now you'll ask a different question, and this question, if you understand the answer, it's the secret of our existence. How can Reb Henoch Fishman, was sein ganzes Sprache ist Yiddish, hat nicht geredet Englisch, he lo diber Brit. You take a kid like Ani Roshkoff, and you know, I'm still a baseball fan until today. The Yankees now go with the three Aarons. The new manager is Aaron Booth. The top player is Aaron Judge. And the biggest Meshuggah fan is Aaron Rakefet. So you got the three Aarons with the Yankees. How could Reb Henoch Fishman, how can we meet? How can we talk? How can our souls interlock? A good question. And he had no choice. In 69, I had a choice. I wound up within 1 year, I had so many offers of full-time collegiate jobs that there was a din Torah against me because I was leaving one of the schools. I said, I have freedom of choice. I never yet knew that a teacher is bound by the people who demand him. For Eina Dom Lo Meid, Eina Mashad Liba Rotzer, Kamuvan, Eina Dom Lo Meid. But they had no choice. And here I come back to Divrei Torah I heard from the Rav Moriah Rebbe. The old story with the Gemara Nida Daflamid, what is the embryo doing? Avi became a father recently. No, that little boy, what did he do in his mother's womb? And exactly, learn Torah. And then as he comes out, they give you a kvetshir, and that's it. You forget everything. So the Rav asked a simple question, Mimadavshach. If they're teaching Torah, you should remember it. It should have a goal. And if they're going to make you forget it, why teach Torah? Why waste the kid's time? Teach him baseball. Teach him mathematics. Teach him, you know, Einstein, what we dealt with in the Sunday class. What bracha would you make on Einstein? I love Reb Menashe Klein at the end where he says he should thank us for not cursing him. But his intellectual honesty, don't forget, he admits that he found the tshuva with a different opinion. But be it as it may, the Rav said so beautifully, you know what the Gemara is telling us? Every Jew is inborn, has a neshama, has the ability to accept the Torah. It's something within you. We're different. Ataba chatanu mikol hamim. We can accept the Torah. We can live with Torah. the whole Baal Tshuva movement is based upon this Gemara in Masechet Nida. And this is axiomatic. And that's exactly what happened. Here we are kids. I was 12 years old when I went into Reb Chanuch Fishman's class. But I sensed the greatness, the Torah, the dedication. And it changed my life. And I want to... Some yes, some no. You got to remember. No, you got to remember. There are many influences on a person, but out of Solanta, take a look what came out of Solanta. Avishai David. From my era, there's a Rabbi Cohen, a Lamdin Muvhak. He was in Scarsdale. I don't know if he's still active in the rabbinate. He's a drop younger than I am. Rabbi Heschel Shechter. You know my story with Heshi.
Well, he started with his
father. And how many kids were sons of rabbis and spat in their father's face afterwards? Right or wrong? God have mercy. You know the expression, Arav Zatochta. You ever hear that expression? It's not a compliment. Take my word for it. So miracles happen. And you can't, you know, one generation, it may not show up. But suddenly you get a grandson, you get a Baal Tshuva. Over the years, I taught so many Baalei Tshuva, or children of Baalei Tshuva. And you have to ask yourself, what happened here? And you see, the neshama was ready. And the influence was overwhelming, positive, beautiful. And Rav Fishman was a very kind person. You see, when I described yesterday his two best friends and my best friends, Rav Norach Bonstein and Rav Yeruchim Gerelik, these were the three. They lived right near each other. You could walk from house to house within 10 minutes, cover all three. Yeah, you have to hear yesterday's shiur to appreciate who I'm talking about. But Rav Norach, I always felt that he wasn't totally at home in America. It was Hitler tragedy. That Brisker Rav's top Talmud, and here he is in the Bronx, Vekuchtafem, who's interested, they became friends for Nachashvera Rambam. He was, the word, a little bit cynical. You follow, he was laughing, what can I do? I'm here, I'll make the most of it, but this is not where I should be. Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelik was the opposite already. He was out to change the Bronx, nothing to do with the Western world, and rebuild Rotten and rebuild Brisk right in the Bronx. All right? Mission impossible am I. And not only a mission impossible, but not a desirable mission. Dor Vidosha, we've spoken about it many times. Mori Rebbe set an example for us how to merge Brisk with Boston, the two big B's, with Berlin in the middle. The Rav, it's a miracle he went to New York. It didn't begin with a B, you follow? Berlin, Boston, Brisk, etc.
He did go to Brooklyn.
He went to Brooklyn. He spoke on the 42 in honor of Lubavitch. That was the first major talk, of the first major affair of Lubavitch in America, and the main guest speaker was the Rav. And you know the story with that picture that I published, the first time it was ever published was in Washington. In Lubavitch, they didn't know what to do for me. Why? No one knew who that young man with the black beard was in the picture, sitting next to the two Rebbeim and the other son-in-law of Shmaya Guraye. No one knew. When my work came out in the Rav, I have a Talmud Kloisner, the Klois, you know, I'm talking a character, Rabbi Dr. Yosef Klausner. What does he go with today? The name Yedidja. Okay. So he gave me a picture that his mother had. His mother was a very, I knew her, very brilliant lady, spoke perfect Hebrew, Yiddish, English, and she was the secretary of the Mizrahi, it could be, or the Bar Haksala, but she moved with all the Gedolim needed her. She was their right hand. So, she had this picture of the Rav from 1939. I think it's with an American flag in back of him. It's at some convention. And I published the picture in the Rav, the world of. Remember the picture, the portrait gallery? you know, people criticize me. Who needs so many pictures of the Rav? You know, people to be critical. So I said, this is for people who love the Rav. It's not for the whole world. You're not interested in the picture. Buy a book about the Rav with one page. This is 600 pages for people who love the Rav. And if you love the Rav, you see the pictures. You look at it again in my book. You'll see what I did. So from that picture, someone at 770 in the library looked at the book, looked at the picture, maybe Rav Levine, the librarian, he's an Adam Gadol, and he said, that's the Rav in the 42 picture. And sure enough, and they gave me, they said they will not publish it officially till I publish it in Washington, which I did. I have a whole description there. So the Rav taught us how you could combine worlds. Da-da. And you have to. Otol, what's the expression in modern Hebrew? Otol geveret bishinui aderet. You follow? The same woman, but it's a different dress. And you remember the Rav saying, we take Torah, it's an old lady, she's not fashionably dressed, and we have to dress her so she'll be attractive in the Western world. This was the Rav.
You know, this was the Rav's drasha on the Saturday night in Boston. Kol Koryakol, when the night of the Esau, and how it was, he asked in Yiddish, I remember listening to it in Yiddish, and he said, Meglech, the Yankov of Lino was a Gadol.
Right.
You see, that's the way he put it. And right. The answer was that he explained why Yitzhak Bidwi did, why Rifkin did, and why he did. That he had to learn.
Right.
To wear Big Day Esav in order
to succeed in the world. Absolutely. All right. So, Reb Henoch, there was a certain calmness about him. I never saw him get angry. Rav Gerelich was a volcano. You know his reputation. I can tell you endless stories. Rav Noach Bornstein didn't get angry. He made a skeptical remark. That was it. It's not worth getting angry. Reb Henoch, there was a certain Ashmechu never left his lips. He always was smiling. And what a wonderful Rebbe. And here I want to tell you a little bit of what I gained from him on a practical level. Changed my life. This scene I can never forget as long as I live. I write about it in Washington. Friday night, so first of all, we learned Yiddish. We had to learn Yiddish. I'm a third generation American. My grandfather lived with us, but the truth is I never spoke with him. Why didn't I speak with him? My grandfather worked as a baker. He worked in Pechtes. He was my grandfather, and this grandfather never Mechalos Shabbos, didn't know anything, just had a daven, had to read Hebrew, never studied Gemara. It's not like my other grandfather, who was yet learned in Volozhin and knew Gemaras by heart. And in America, he gave the family, rumor has it, family lore, that if he owed the government at the end of the year $1,000, he added on another $100 as a voluntary gift to the United States. He was a boss painter. He had a whole crew working under him. Oh, this was an accomplishment. When did he go to shul? Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, maybe some Simchas Torah. I don't know if he went any other. You understand that? I have to be honest with the picture. So my grandfather, who worked as a baker, worked at night. When do you bake? So he slept by day. So we rarely had a chance to speak. But what I did do, and some of you will recall this, you have to be already close to my age. Friday, I used to listen to WEVD. And WEVD was the Yiddish radio. So I listened, I understood, I didn't understand, but they cried, they laughed, you picked up more and more. So, Einzach hat das getan von mir, habe ich euch gelernt Yiddish. That came in very handy, of course, to learn with the Rav. When I think of the Rav, I see the Rav in Yiddish, not in English. I have to be honest too, Modela Kaddish Baruch Hu Dov, when the Mossad tapped me on the shoulder and Mark heard my words yesterday when I spoke. They tapped me, but it's because of my wife. She was the one who said, you have to go, and encouraged, etc. So I have to tell you, knowing Yiddish was a tremendous blessing, because in the 1980s, any city outside of Moscow and Leningrad, which were cosmopolitan cities, the main language that you could speak to the Jews was in Yiddish. In Minsk, in Riga, in Vilna, anyone 40 and over spoke perfect Yiddish. And anyone under 40 spoke the Gehakte Yiddish, but they spoke Yiddish. My Yiddish came in unbelievably handy. It was more than that. Friday night, we saw Kedusha. You can't start to understand this today. Today, you live in Brooklyn, you live in Lakewood, you live in Queens, you live in areas in Detroit, in Boston, in Chicago. Shabbos is often gas. You see Shabbos. I have to tell you, in Israel, Yerushalayim, in my neighborhood, we walk on the gutter on Shabbos. We walk in the neighborhood, changed so the 50 years I'm living there. And when we came in Aliyah, Rechavia was maybe 20% religious. Today, if you buy a home in Rechavia, if you buy an apartment, you have to be crazy if you're Mechalel Shabbos. I mean, I told you, when one of the big shot women turned 90, so they interviewed her for the Jerusalem Post. So she had, how does it feel to be 90 and all your life you lived in Rechavia, and this idiot says, I never thought the day would come in Rechavia when my neighbors would look down upon me because I drive on Shabbos. You follow? Instead of saying, Ashrenu Shezachinu, and this is already from the Alta Doris of the Talmidei Hagra, the generation Cheshen, the Cheshen family, Gedolei Yisrael, this is a new day. All right, that's the reality. I hope her grandchildren woke up and came back with the Malach that taught them Torah. So we sought out, so we used to go to Reb Chenich's house Friday night. You know, these were small apartments in the Bronx, but for dessert, we'd walk over, four or five fellas come to Reb Chenich Fishman. And I noticed something, that his wife was a wonderful baker, chocolate cake, delicious. And I notice he leaves over a drop, a spoonful, doesn't touch it. No, Dov, it can be an accident, right or wrong. 1 week, 2 weeks, the third week, you know, an American kid, you're curious. We Americans were famous here that we did. When I came in Aliyah, I went to see the Alta Briska here. So they told me that American kids, you can't fool them. They're always going to ask you questions. They're not going to let you get away without a question. And Americans are like that. It's a healthy trait. So I said, Rebbe on Shuldik, excuse me. But they say, yeah, I see every week, Melustibi, you leave over a piece of cake. He breaks into a broad smile. I can't forget this. And he says, you know, I come from Mir Yeshiva. Mim gelernt Musa, we learned Musa. I had a great Rebbe, Rebbe Ruchem Levavitz, that's what I spoke about yesterday. He was the dominant figure in Mir. And Rebbe Ruchem taught us that we have to be the master over our traits, our wants, our desires. I leave over that last piece on purpose to break my desire. I would love to finish the piece of cake, but I can't do it. I have to show that I'm the master. It's overwhelming. Page 30 from a real wonderful volume called Washington. His impact upon me was incalculable. His conduct revealed a majestic world to a Bronx boy who previously knew only the aspirations and visions of the American dream. While I subsequently continued to finish my desserts, I have never forgotten the symbolism and message inherent in Rabbi Fishman's actions. And I can't say it better than that. And when you look back, we have to be honest with ourselves. I'm not here to offend anyone sitting in front of me. But many of us in this room came in Aliyah. We gave up. It's no question. We gave up a comfortable background, a language, a milieu, surroundings that we mastered, understood, functioned in. I remember when I left America, so Rabbi Belkin made a farewell, as a matter of fact, from Rabbi Belkin's farewell dinner to yesterday's dinner, I don't recall how many dinners there were in my honor over the years, but they interlocked yesterday and 50 years ago. And at the dinner, they were eulogizing me. Like, look what this man is giving up. Rabbi of the Kehillah, true, I built the whole Kehillah, Yesh Me'ayim. Rosh Yeshiva, beloved by students. Brought you regards from a student who got all excited, the Hexter name. And he's right, see, your father, I wrote it down. He then says, his father knew your father yet from Frankfurt. Yeah, we gave it up. So did Reb Hedrick give up that last piece of cake. Gave us the ability, just think what I'm saying. And we made big decisions. Right decisions. Fabulous decisions. One time, I tell you a true story. I should have told it yesterday. It's a true story. In Kiryat Arba, we're starting to build up. In BMT, a number of our graduates went to Kiryat Arba, and some never were korban, were sacrifices to the Ribbono Shel Olam. They were killed in terrorist attacks. Not just some, quite a few. And one time in Kiryat Arba, they're describing to me, they come into this house Friday night, it has to be late 70s, and they're having a whole group of Americans, are having a whole discussion, if Rakefet had remained in America, would he have the same influence he has today in BMT? And they were debating it, and when they asked me about it, I said, there's no question, but no influence. Said, you go in Aliyah, you affect the whole world. Why you? You have one little class in front of you. Here, you're in the center. All eyes are upon Jerusalem. The impact, and who would ever dream what would happen afterwards with YUTorah.org. So that's one little story of Reb Hinnich Fishman. I want to tell you another story. And we were kids growing up in the Bronx. 1 million Jews, maybe 1% Shomer Shabbos. What is 1%? 1,000? What am I getting there? 1,000 out of 1 million? 1%? 10,000? Ugh, I'm way over. 10,000. What am I, an idiot? 1/10 of 1% Shomer Shabbos. And Reb Hinnich, this adjustment, where he's coming from, where he's at. And occasionally he would talk about the Alter Heim. And I'll never forget in the eighth grade, and I'm a kid of 13 now. All right, a kid of 13 has a mind. Don't underestimate a 12, 13-year-old, a bright kid. Oh boy, don't underestimate. Those are the years you become a goon if you have the ability. So Reb Hinnich says to us, well, in America, when are the shuls crowded? And the kids jump out, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and the rabbinit with a straight face. Before the Eli, I would finish up, make a little speech, and I would tell everyone, please, to remain seated. We're going to do Ne'ilah, we're going to do Mariv, and we're going to finish with the Zman. I used to do Mariv before this, you follow me, before it was ours, because I didn't want everyone to, we wouldn't be left with a minion. And I would say, and our next prayer session will be next Rosh Hashanah. I would give the date, the time, understand. I was on, I knew what went on. Well, yeah, we had a fight, Jews should come. He says, yeah, so the kids all yelled out, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, the shul is filled. He says, in Mir, we had, I'm quoting him now, word by word, we had as big a minion Wednesday night as we had in Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And I, as a kid, I have to say, I admit, Chata'ai ani maskei hayom, I didn't believe my Rebbe. This is not possible. Can't be. I have to tell you, when I came in Aliyah, I finally have to say, I start to understand Reb Henoch. If you daven in the Shtiblach in Katamon, believe me, there are more people davening there during the week than on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur put together. Thousands upon thousands and thousands. And I know myself, I am. Baruch Hashem. I once mentioned I haven't missed the morning minyan in the 50s. I don't know how many years. So I come into the Shtiblach, and there's a nice fellow there who worked for the... Not very nice fellow. Never married, but very nice, Erlich. And he comes over to me, oh, I listened to your shirm. Is it Shayach? You didn't miss a minyan in so many decades? You never were sick? You know, like I said, you know, I never, Baruch Hashem, Al Tiftach Pelasatn, I don't want to say a word. But Israel, now I start to understand Mir. I never forgot that story. As many people on a Wednesday night, he said, not a Monday, Thursday. Monday, Thursday, yep, is there more Jews that come to shul because Kriyas HaTorah, Kriyat HaTorah. But Wednesday night, I'll never forget that. And then he told me another story, mentioned another story, which too, until today, I start to understand where we're coming from and where we're at and the goals that are still in front of us. He said one time, you know, commenting, these were his earliest years in America, off the cuff, he said, yes, his daughter, he said, there are in America a few Jews, a few good Jews, a number of good Jews, Mezeta, Abovizgiven, and the Altaheim is Nishtar. It's not here. You don't have that same belief. So he said, Rebbe, what do you mean? He says, in Mir, it was tangible. No. Give us a beispiel, give us an example. I'll never forget the example. He said, they would be sitting and learning, and a woman would run into the shul with her head totally covered with a scarf. You got to remember, in Lithuania, many women didn't cover their hair, which is a different shmuis. I had many rebbeim whose wives did not cover their hair, but that's a different story. I've got to make a living, so that's one of the topics I can speak about, what went wrong in Lithuania. But it's a fascinating topic. But the woman would run in and grab the Aron Kodesh and plead with God. Her child was sick. And he described this scene that she felt the Ribbono Shel Olam was right in front of her, tangible, muchashi, as we say in modern Hebrew. I never forgot that. And do we feel that way? We stand Shmoneh Esrei. Oh, yeah, I have to struggle. Someone wrote in one of the interviews about the Rebbe, about the Lubavitcher Rebbe. So he said he went to the Rebbe and he said to the Rebbe, I have such trouble, he says, during Shmoneh Esrei, I try to be mechaven in every bracha, but I can never succeed. And the Rebbe says to him, I have the same problem. And he walked out, he said, ah, he says, Baruch Hashem, I'm not in bad company. You follow? He was so encouraged and consoled by the Rebbe's comment. But you see, this feeling, min shteit bad the Ribbono Shel Olam. I'll tell you, at the Kotel, that's where I feel it. When you come to the Kotel, it's to me overwhelming. Stones that have such a message to deliver to us and continuity. Generations before, I think of the pictures in Salanta of the Kotel with Jews there 100 years ago, a few Jews standing there. Who would ever dream what would happen in our time? I think back to 29th of November, Choftet November, when this partition was declared, of the teachers in Solanta crying. I can never forget that. It was then an all Zionist faculty. Many of the teachers were not really Shomer Shabbos. It's the era, and but they were crying. Kotel. I feel it. Davening, all right. Sometimes I daven a little better than other times, but there's a lot to improve. Asach was medaven machen besser. And I'll never forget Reb Henoch, the lady. That image remains in my mind, throwing herself before the Aron Kodesh, pleading with the Ribbono Shel Olam, edaf shikan arafuah, for her child that is sick. I'll never forget that. And let me go a step further. Something else about Reb Henoch. Serious, honest, politically not correct. Taught me good lessons. I'm still shaking when I spoke at the Chabad Torah learning retreat, the biggest retreat in the world, with 1,500 people there, endless sessions going on a year or 2 years ago. And I'm speaking, and the Chabadnikim, the Chabadnikiyot, the Rebbetzins, the Shluchot who heard me, people come over to me afterwards, "Oh, you are fabulous, and you don't give it a concern about being politically correct." Spoke out against gays sanctifying marriages. I mean, I can't even conceive of it, that a Torah Jew, so I say you have gays, all right, 2%, whatever. Many are not, you can get help. I've been involved with it, I know what I'm talking about. But to sanctify, to go against an open Gemara, ain't kotzin ketuva, and I walked away. I was so depressed. I said to Malka, "Can you believe it? I spoke out against gays making a marriage ceremony, and the shluchot are telling me I'm a hero because I'm willing not to be politically correct." Oh my. I'm told that in Hank, where you come from, Steve, they told the faculty not to speak in public against gay marriages because it can create problems with the law of the land. God have mercy on us. And Jews are still living in West Hempstead. You were just there, right? Jews are still there?
There are a couple there.
Yeah, there are a couple there yet?
I don't know. I didn't ask the kids, but I'm sure.
Well, yeah, sure. Okay. I'm waiting. No, I mean, are there Jews still there? I'm not talking gays.
Gays. Oh, Jews?
Yeah.
Yeah, in West
Hempstead? Yeah. There's still
3,000 families.
So will you ask one of the rabbis how it can be that you're allowed to live in a country that doesn't observe the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach? I'm still waiting for an answer. I don't know. I give credit here. I'm no big fan of the Supreme Court, but at least in this issue, they were unanimous. You understand? Baruch Hashem. And it'll get better. It'll get better. Be'ezrat Hashem. So Rabbi Henoch was no big fan of politically correctness. Why am I saying this? You're in eighth grade. There was no graduation that was more important in my life than the eighth grade graduation. You're leaving childhood, you're becoming a man. Afterwards, everything flows. You go to high school, you go to college, you get smicha, you go to graduate school. Say that's the world I came from. It was as simple and as easy and as indigenous and as normal as eating blueberry pie in the United States. And then when you're graduating elementary school, oh, you have that great moment, your album, your autograph album. Do you remember that? Is there a different word for it? That's the way I remember it, autograph album. Oh, and the big yichus who you asked to sign it. This is your friends, your teachers that you like. The principal, oh, I have autographs I can sell for money. What happened to that principal of Solanta? If I had any seichel, I'd write a novel and I'd make enough money I could buy this whole campus and embellish it 3 times over. I've written 8 books and I can tell you the 9th one is already finished. We have to start the production part. And Ribbono Shel Olam, how much money have I made? Okay, Baruch Hashem. Avi, enough money for today. I've come ahead of bread and water. I can afford coffee and cake for the next 120 years. Be'ezrat Hashem.
Kein Yerbu.
Kein Yerbu, Kein Tibena, only to teach Torah, believe me. So I give And then you give your autograph book. So what do people write? Flowers are red, this flower is blue, you are a blue friend, a true friend. You know, shtuyat. Even, and then you'll go to a rabbi who writes, Yivarecha Hashem v'yishmerecha, chazek v'yamatz. What do you write? He gave a blessing. Reb Henich wrote, I'll never forget it. Remember the words of our sages and ethics of the fathers. Zechar mash chazal katov. Anyone whose wisdom precedes his fear of sin, his wisdom will not endure. Kol sheyirat cheto kodemet lechachmato, chachmato mitkayemet. V'kol shechachmato kodemet liyirat cheto, ein chachmato. Mitkayamet. And I have to tell you, what a message here. I was probably a haughty kid, got a good grade, boasting about it. He put me down perfectly. Forget about the good grades, the chokhmah, yirat Hashem. This is the most important. Yirato kodemet lechokhmato. Shot me down in the autograph book, but what a message, l'dorei dorot. And I have to be honest, at times we cannot be politically correct. It's very sad to be politically correct. Many times political correctness is totally in opposition to Torah Hashem Tamima. You see Haaretz newspaper? Millions upon millions of dollars are poured into our Haaretz from all type of leftist foundations with one desire, to uproot the Jewish state, the rabbis and Torah. You've heard of the Shisterman Foundation? The money that is spent to uproot Torah, to destroy Kashrut in Israel, this alternative Kashrut. Some of the heads are conservative Jews, public conservative Jews, American Anglo origins, etc. No, politically correct. The gay issue. Who could ever dream that human beings would walk around with PhDs, knowledge, saying that two men and two women constitute a marriage? This is politically correct. Chilul Shabbos is Chilul Shabbos. We can't hide it. What's going on with the getting paid? What is it, 2.5 times your regular salary to work on Shabbos? Wow. Rav Henich taught me. You have to be decent, you have to be nice, you have to be upright, you have to be honest. But you don't have to be politically correct. And of all the messages in my autograph album from 8th grade, this is the one message that resonates until this very moment. And I owe all this to Reb Henich. More than anything, and here we come back to the Bronx, your youth, your aspirations, your parents. As I mentioned, I think it was yesterday in class, my parents were fallouts of the Depression. I told you my father was in pharmacy school, pharmaceutical school, I think at Fordham University, and he dropped out to go to work, help support, and would never leave that job. Worked for the post office for all his life. People offered him chances to go into business. He had friends who were much more successful. And his attitude was, at least the post office will never fold. There will always be a job for me, a salary, a paycheck. My mother, I told you, had $100 in 10 different banks. I used to say, Mom, why do you split your money up like that? It's crazy. And she said, I remember the Depression. I had to wait online to take out $10. That's all I was allowed to take out of the bank. This way, if I have in every different bank, I can go to each bank and take out $100. So it was a fallout. Their dream for their children, this was the Jewish dream, to be a medical doctor. Nothing was more important than my son, the doctor. And they achieved it with my brother, but because of Reb Geshen Yankelevich, Reb Henoch Fishman, and his older brother, my brother may be a medical doctor, but it doesn't take away Kihuzeh from his tzidkut. And those of you who know him know what I'm talking about. But I'm the eldest. Oh, there was a high school in the Bronx then that was the talk of the world. Much has been written about it until today. Movies, novels, Bronx High School of Science. When someone tells you he went to Bronx High School of Science, that's like telling you, pardon me, Charlie, he's a graduate of Harvard. Right or wrong? I took the exam.
We had Boston Latin School.
Where the Tolna Rebbe went. Right or wrong? Reb Yitzchak Tversky?
My father-in-law.
Your father-in-law, the dentist. Your father always boasted to me, I'm the only one who gets the Rav to shut up. Right or wrong? So I'm going to Bronx High School of Science, and Reb Henoch asked me what my plans are. This already was in June 51. And you should know, for 4 years I got letters from Bronx High School of Science as if I'm a student there, which shows you it might have been a good school, but their administrative staff had to take the akadachas. I don't know how to translate that. It wasn't good at all. So 4 years. So he says to him, I'll never forget, these were his very words. Efshedach meni betrachten. Ich weiß, du bist ein frommer junger Mann. Aber du, der hat noch angefangen lernen jetzt. Lernen darf man, viel Jahren darf man lernen. Zu sein der Talmud Chacham, translation. Let me, what did he say? He says, you know, I think we should think it over. He says, I know you're frum. He didn't use the word elich yet. Yesterday we maledicted using frum and we have to use elich, but it doesn't matter. He says, but you just started to learn. It takes many years to be a Talmud Chacham. So I said, let me think it over. And my poor parents, I have to say it was hard for them, but my mother, she was the boss in the house. Today, to talk about feminism, I never heard the word feminism growing up, but in my house and all my friends, your father counted for nothing. His job was to work, make a living. The mother ran the house. That's the way it was. I mean, it was universal. I don't know of any exception. And the Haraya, we used to say, if you're going to someone's home, I'm going to my aunt Ida's home. Never was the uncle, had nothing, it was the aunt. It gates of my Baba, I go to my Baba, the men. But my mother, see, the roots were in her as a Calvariski, as a cousin to Rabbi Revel, to Rabbi Gibraltar, to Rabbi Cohn, a very famous family from Kovna. The roots were there. So then I came back to Reb Henoch, and I say, is the Rebbe gerecht? Maybe the Rebbe's right, then I should go to Talmudical Academy, MTA. But the exams are over. He said to me, I'll take care of it. And he made an appointment for a special exam with the Bochen of the yeshiva to get in, Reb Mendel Sachs. I was a kid of 13. I already knew who Reb Mendel Sachs was, Chafetz Chaim's son-in-law. I knew who the Chafetz Chaim was. And the day comes for my exam. I write this up in Washington. I'll never forget room 212A, I think it was. A little room. Big library in the room was the library of the chief rabbi of St. Louis, Rav Fischel. He gave that library to the yeshiva. and he made a condition, it should remain one, it should all be together, it shouldn't be separated. So it remained in that room with a plaque, I think the name is official, I hope I have it right, and it was his library, that room, fine, good, and there's Reb Mendel Zaks with Rabbanisha Kleider clothes, a long beard, and I'm a frightened little kid, and there are about five kids on one side, five kids on the other side, each one having an exam for whatever reason, younger, older kids. And comes my turn, and he says, Rav Fishman had me geret, Rabbi Fishman spoke with me, nu, Zaga Shtikl Gemara, was hat neben gelernt mit dem? What did you learn with Rav Fishman? I say to Gemara, beautiful. And then came that fateful moment, Zaga Bissel Rasi. And I'm sitting there, I don't know what he is talking about. And sitting next to me, you should know I checked it out for Washington. Rabbi Lichtenstein couldn't believe that I reached the individual. I remember the name was Berman. What happened? Read Washington. You get the details. This older fellow who was taking an exam to get into the Rav Shir leaned over. He understood what was happening and said to me, he means Rashi. He means Rashi. Alitvak, a guten Sabbis. Sabbis nach Sachris, ab dem Gesen a Sixi in Sul. Right or wrong, Alitvak. He says, Zog a bissel Rashi. And I, oh, Rashi. I read the Rashi. I read it Tosfat, I got into the second year Shia. I skipped the first year, you follow? I went into Reb Michal Katz. By the time I was a senior in high school, I already was from Reb Noach Bornstein Shia, was a college Shia. And that's Berman, Rabbi Berman, he later was a principal of a Beit Yaakov, saved my life. Zag a bissel Rasi. And oh, I came back and I told Rav Fishman, and look what he saved. But you see, when you say he saved one individual, Ani Rothkopf, how big my family is, Kanaim Hara, how big my brother's family is, how big my little brother's family is. Now let's talk about students. You have no idea what we're talking about. And you talk about the internet. And I told you there, Malava Malka dinner reception, Bishvatami, this is in Ranana, Rebbe and Talmud, they're honoring yours truly. This Talmud, he represents thousands that you've influenced listening to whyutorah.org. And he's one of the few I ever met. I get emails. You can't believe what some of the emails say. This is what I spoke about yesterday when I told Sherry, don't believe everything the emails say. And how did I meet him? I told you the story. Through my grandson. He was closing a business deal in Yerushalayim, and he asked the Rosh Yeshiva of Merkaz Harav, send me a kid who knows English. I want to be sure I know what I'm signing off on. And the Rosh Yeshiva said, I'll send you my chavrut. They sends this kid. They sign off the deal. The guy then said, hey, he says, where were you born? He says to this little kid, this young kid, he was about 19, 20. Where were you born? He says, Yerushalayim. How do you know English so well? So, oh, my grandparents spoke English to my mother. And my mother speaks English to us. I have two native languages. What's your grandfather's name? Well, you wouldn't know him. He teaches. Ah, what's the name? Says, well, they know him as Rav Aaron Rekefet. Guy faints. And then he says, can we contact your grandfather? And that's how he came. Think of the influence. Think of the rebuilding of Torah. Think of the schut that Rav Chanan Fishman has. And I compare the internet, lekit shichacho peyer. You know what Chazal say? That's a mitzvah, you don't even know you're doing it. Leket shechacha peyer. We don't know how many are listening. I see them, but I really don't see them. Virtual tamidim. And I go back to Reb Chenich with that advice. Chtrachzich, I think, maybe you shouldn't go to Bronx Science. It was very hard for my parents, but they accepted it. Look, one drop of advice. How many lives were affected, eternity. And I'm one of many that this man had influence on. It's overwhelming. And let me show you again to develop my thesis. He was different than Reb Noach, different than Reb Yerucham. I'll give you a simple example. His eldest son, his name was Heshi Fishman. Probably was Tzvi Hirsch. Heshi wasn't that much younger than I am. Maybe 3-4 years younger. At the most. Heshi was born 4 years younger. So we, to a certain degree, bonded. And here he is, growing up in the Bronx. And believe it or not, I took Heshi to his first baseball game. We lived near Yankee Stadium, not as close as Steve. Steve rolled down the hill. He was in Yankee Stadium and 4 minutes flat from his house. It took how long would it take you?
A little longer. Grand,
come on, Grand Concourse and where?
Cross 166.
Oh, all right. So you had 6 streets that way and one street the other way. Come on, it took you under 10 minutes to get to Yankee Stadium. So I took him to Yankee Stadium. You know, we came home and I said to Reb Chenich, Ich hab gemacht für meine Sohn an Amerikaner Heint. I turned your son into an American today. I took him to Yankee Stadium. Now just think for a minute how Rabbi Yerucham would have reacted. Gemacht him für den Amerikaner, gekeilt him, you ruined him, who needed it? Was tut man dort? Man guckt an a Goy. You know, then they couldn't use a different word. There were no Afro-Americans yet in baseball. Man guckt an a Goy. Your daughter Rabbi Noach Bornstein. We make a gangsta Yankee game, gemacht Geld from das. You understand? It'd be a cynical remark. Rav Henich Fishman broke into a broad smile. I want to tell you, as a result of that experience, I utilized it many decades later, very far from the United States. Here I am, the guest of the Australian Mizrahi Chabad community. And by now I've given a number of shayurim in Melbourne, which is the heart of Judaism in Australia. And now this is a big, major lecture during the week, the most important lecture. 400-500 people, a tremendous crowd. There's Melbourne. It's not the Brooklyn. It's not Queens. Certainly not Yerushalayim. 400-500 people. And I get up to speak. I remember by now I know a little bit of their mentality. They know a little bit of mine. I get up to speak and I say, ladies and gentlemen, my dear friends, today I became one of you, a real Australian. And they're all looking at me. And I pause, the dramatic effect, and I pull a hat out that they bought for me that they signed by my students. I put it on my head. I attended my first Australian football game. You follow? There was nothing I could say that I bought them on the spot. I showed them the hat. Students took me. Signed with beautiful, I have that hat until today. But they didn't realize when I was saying that, I was really thinking back to my words to Reb Chenich Fishman. A few years went by and who would ever dream that one day the little kid from the Bronx would be a member of the same faculty with Reb Chenich Fishman, Reb Geshen Yankelevich. It hurts. No one knows what their lifespan is, but Mrs. Rebel, who go and dream that she was my relative by marriage, Mrs. Rebel said something to me that I never forgot. All of you know that Reb Dov Rebel had a short life, 1885-1940. The Atmos Nefesh of the 30s, he was a man that had $3 million in pledges, and the Depression hits, maybe $1.5 million was left over on paper. It wasn't worth the paper it was written on. Yeshiva was practically bankrupt. He had to sell off all the land, which part of it Yeshiva bought back, but they once owned all the land down to the Harlem River for blocks around. It was farmland. Ugh, what that would be worth today, how big the campus would be. And then the aggravation of trying to save Jews out of the inferno in Europe. And he died young, had a stroke in the middle of his shir in Choshen Mishpat. He still continued to teach, even though he was president. Rabbi Belkin attempted to emulate Rabbi Reffel, but he couldn't do it. He continued for 1 year. He still gave Shiurim, 44, 45, and then he had to stop. Couldn't, the responsibility was too great. And all his life, he was happy to be president of the yeshiva, but he mourned the fact he was no longer a rebbe. It's very, I write about it in Washington too, quoting Rabbi Belkin. And Mrs. Revel said to me, Rebbetzin Revel said to me, Rabbi Revel said to her, Sarah, it really doesn't matter how long you lived. What's more important is what you accomplished. And I can say about Rav Chenich Fishman, all right, 1910 to 1965, same amount of years as Rabbi Revel, not a long life by today's standards, but what great accomplishments. It's not only his own family, which Baruch Hashem, he has banim uvnei banim, oiskim b'torah v'mitzvah, but all the talmidim that he influenced. His son died young also, probably 55, Masha Hukazah, Heshi, Zelba, the same story. One more source, and we finished out the first person I want to say thank you to. And remember, we said yesterday, I believe I mentioned it, those of us that are happily married here, you all know that we really amount to nothing. It's the wife behind us. It's an open medrash, actually. Chazal say it. Kol acharei ha'isha. The medrash tells the number of medrashim. I spoke about this decades ago, too, in great depth. But the medrash tells about the Russia who married a tzaddikit. He became a tzaddik. And the tzaddikit who, and the Russia who married a tzaddikit, he became a tzaddik. But the, how does it go? The tzaddik who married a Rasha, he never remained the tzaddik. He became a Rasha. Kol acharei ha'isha. Rebbetzin Fishman was a class act. There's a volume that came out, and it's a very nice volume for Art Scroll. But once again, I'll show you the Art Scroll deficiency, which tortures me because I'm a Talmud of the Rebbe. Intellectual dishonesty I cannot tolerate because it shows a fadokmkeit. It shows something, I give you, something's morally and ethically wrong with the person through and through. Anyway, this volume, A Tale of Two Worlds by Deborah Glucksman. And it's about the Rabbi David and Rebbetzin Bastia Bender. It's from the Bender family from Far Rockaway. I've taught members of the family. Fascinating volume. Well documented, brings to life Europe and America running away from Hitler. Okay. Part 5 of the volume, dealing with the war years, it's page 249 on. So one of the people they talk about is Rebbetzin Table Fishman at the time, Shereshevsky, later Wernick. That is Reb Henick's wife. She was from the Shereshevsky family, which is a well-known Torah family in Europe. She married Reb Henick, I believe, in Shanghai. After his death, a number of years later, Bezivik Sheni, she married Rabbi Moshe Wernick, who was also a Shanghai survivor. He was, if I'm not mistaken, Mashkiach. He was on the faculty in what you call Skokie today, Hebrew Theological College in Chicago. And here, beginning on page 249, they talk about the women who too were running away and running to Vilna for their lives, what we spoke about yesterday in great detail. And her best friend, Tabel Shereshevsky, was Batsheva Ziv. Who was Batsheva Ziv? That was my revered neighbor, our closest friend. Batsheva Ziv later reaches America, marries Rav Shmuel Soloveitchik, and Bezivik Sheni marries Rabbi Yehoshua Chutner. Both of them were widowed, 1968. She's coming from America, he's in Israel, and to avoid the problems of a second marriage, who you invite, they got married in Switzerland. And I just gave that advice to a student who's going into a second marriage for both of them. And I said, get married in Israel, in Jerusalem, and that way you'll avoid the problem of who to invite and who not to invite. And in the volume, it tells the story of how they're running to Vilna, how they find refuge there, and how they get involved with Kobe, Japan. Table later goes to Shanghai. I believe Batsheva reaches America perhaps directly from Kobe. I don't believe she was in Shanghai, but if anyone can correct me, I'll be happy to be corrected. But here I want to tell you my pain. You read the footnote, Tabel Shereshevsky would marry Rabbi Henoch Fishman and after his passing Rabbi Moshe Wernick. Batsheva Ziv would marry Rabbi Yehoshua Chutna. What's missing there?
First husband,
Rav Shmuel Soloveitchik. Ay, how they can leave that out is beyond me. It hurts. It mamish hurts. We don't have to all think the same as I began yesterday's share, but have respect for all viewpoints that are healthy, dynamic, successful Torah viewpoints. Yes, Rabbi Rubin.
It's a pleasant surprise. Art school has a chumash, I think it's called stone chumash.
Yeah, we know the chumash.
Commentaries.
Right, and it has the rav.
It has the rav.
Right, I'll tell you about that in a
second. This was the point that they list all the different people that these, Rashi, Ibn Ezra, and Rabbi Yosef Soloveitchik is listed.
Right, correct.
I didn't expect that.
And there's a shul in Detroit that doesn't use the chumash because Rabbi Soloveitchik's name is in it. So, I respect the shul in Detroit more than Otsko. You understand what I'm saying? They have a principle. Fine. Your question. Und wie da ar. If you can mention the Rav and the Chumash Baruch Hashem, why can't Shreb Shmuel Soloveitchik be remembered?
Book by, I think his name is Puskin.
Right.
He wrote about the art of happiness. It's worth something
like
that.
Right.
In one of his volumes, where he lists all the great sources of Gedolim, the Rav is not there. He lists
Yitzchak, all I can tell you is they burned the Rambam's writings in public. Jews, right or wrong, Mora Nevuchim. Okay. Okay. Where are we today in the year 2018? So Baruch Hashem, justice will ring out in 2118. There'll be an entirely different attitude towards the Rav. And we will have had a share in it. But let that be for 50 years from now, 100 years from now. Okay. To reiterate, first of all, I want to thank everyone for coming. It warms my heart. I hope that listening are members of the Fishman family, and if anyone feels my portrait of their father is not correct, it's not so. It's correct in the sense that this is what Aaron Rakefet Ani Rothkopf got from him. And this is why memoir literature is so important. It's not right, it's not wrong. It reflects a certain reality. But I'd be happy to hear if anyone's take on Reb Henich is different than mine. Be'ezrat Hashem, next week we pick up exactly where we left off, and I turn to Reb Meir Kahana. And it's what bothers me is people have said to me on the street, they're more interested in hearing about Meir Kahana than anyone else. Reb Meir is not Reb Aaron Cutler, is not the Rav, but I guess the feeling is they know the Rav, they know Reb Aaron, they know. But Reb Meir, they want to see my take on Reb Meir, which I'll be happy to share with you. Be'ezrat Hashem. With Reb Henich today was the more personal relationship. Yesterday was the factual diagram of his life. And also today, what's fascinating is I wanted to stress, think of what it's like. Min kumta reis from mir yeshiva and min kumta to the Bronx, and you have to speak English and learn a whole new mentality.
Did you ever learn English?
Partially, but it's not the Rav's English. That whole generation, they spoke a broken English, a broken English.
That's great. Didn't the boys come, like yourself, come from homes where they spoke Yiddish? So he didn't have as much of a problem.
No. In Salanta.
Language was Yiddish.
No. What you're right is that in Salanta, there were many students from Yiddish-speaking home. That's absolutely true. That he could teach in Yiddish. I can tell you even better. In 70 or 71, the second or third year, it must be second year of BMT, I gave a shiur in Abavanel in BMT, Abavanel 24, where it was located, on the Musar movement. And I gave the whole shiur in Yiddish. And the class was with me 100%, but they were all Ashkenazim. It's not like today, I have a lot of Svadim. Today you can't speak Yiddish in Torah Tshaka. A third of the kids are Svadim, you understand? That's number one. Number two, they heard Yiddish in the house. I heard a drop of Yiddish, my grandfather. But you were raised, no, it was not a native language to me. It only became more native as the years wore on in Yeshiva. Okay, now, before we go further, all the freebies, you want to get ready, Vic? Okay, I mentioned in class Rabbi Hirschenson. I opened up a Pandora's box. You have no idea over the world how many people corresponded with me on Monkey Kodesh and Rabbi Hirschenson. The Professor Ellenson, the head of the Reform movement, who is a very interesting individual. He's not the average Reform rabbi. He's a shtickel and elecha. I mean, it's really hard to put two and two together there. Anyway, he wrote on Hirschenson. These are all on Hirschenson articles.
He also wrote on Hildesheim.
He wrote on Hildesheim. He wrote on Hildesheim. They hear another article. They're overjoyed that I mentioned Hirschenson, and they jumped on him to Motzei Shelo Rav. Like I told you, my Talmud from Tells, the Chrona Levracha, he was furious at the Haredi world. Oh, did he fall in love with Hirschenson? But they compare Hirschenson to David Hartman. In my opinion, a compliment. But there was an element. In other words, this question today with the railroad, you see the newspapers, some people say, Shabbos is Shabbos. Who said the state doesn't have to observe Shabbos? Other people have articles. Shabbos is very nice, but a public state can't have Shabbos. You have to have the trains running, pikuach nefesh, the airport open. It's a lot of baloney. The airport closes on Yom Kippur, it could close every Shabbos. But you need people who will demand that. But if you have people willing to get 2.50% per hour more, no, what do you want? 250%, they're jumping for the work. But he speaks about the public Shabbos, hits the nail on the head. This is an article that appeared in Tradition about the Maral of Prague in London. It's by Schnur Lyman. It's from years ago, but we've mentioned the Maral of Prague. So here are documents, a very fascinating article. This is from Morty Tarragon. I picked up the Rehovot newsletter, Erev Shabbos. This is for anyone who wants to get upset and aggravated. And this is a real problem we're dealing with. A total conflict. Torah versus Western civilization. This is about the integration of the army with women and the problem for religious soldiers in the army. In other words, if you're an officer, they're going to give you a command where you have men and women together. I want to be honest, gentlemen. People in the army don't live differently than they live in North Tel Aviv. I don't have to elaborate. A man is a man, a woman is a woman. We who have Torah, we have standards. It's a different world. You see what's going on in America today. You see what's going on in Hollywood. You see what's going on in New York. You see the New York Times. Jew after Jew after Jew. They're morons. My wife can't even read it. She says it's pornography. It's pornography in the New York Times. No, if they lived like that in America, what do we want in North Tel Aviv? And if North Tel Aviv comes to the army, say, so you're in command of soldiers, and you're going to see and have and problems, and I don't want to go further. I can tell you problems I know from eyewitnesses. So here's material pleading with the army not to make women and men totally integrated, but it's a tremendous struggle because you got to be politically correct. And this, and the chief of staff of the army, he is the yeshiva boy. He is a Talmud Reb Chaim Drukman. He's a Talmud of Ar Etzion. He's a son of religious parents who survived the Holocaust. And God's all up hidden, who we don't know who he married. I go back to Reb Yosef Eliyahu Henkin when they asked him, so many kings with tzaddikim had sons that were Rishayim. So many kings with Rishayim had sons that were tzaddikim. And Reb Yosef Eliyahu Henkin says, yeah, m'veis ved the tatas, m'veis nicht ved the mamas given. We know who the father or mother, who knows, he is pashit. He doesn't understand what's going on. They will destroy the greatest achievement of the Jewish people in modern times, the IDF, for the sake of political correctness. And if you know what's going on, Rakefet doesn't count, but Rav Eli Satin just spoke out unbelievably last week. So we got a big battle that we're in the middle of. And if anyone wants now Jewish actions, I'm in Zayin Gesund, and look what we have achieved in the Western world. What a marriage. Welches, Manashevets, Kosher, 100% Concord grape juice, Mitzvei Hashkachas, the OU, and a Rebisha Hashkacha, Minchat. Oh my gosh, Minchat. Gentlemen, is this for Kiddush too? Is it like the grape juice here that says Kosher Kiddush, Abba Kaisers? Ich seh das nicht, I don't see it. Okay, so that's the first part of this year, and I want to end off for the people listening and tuning in again in Chilton. Happiness, das v'dlami b'sotam v'jishuv v'chamot. Vic brought in mashka, we should drink a l'chaim.